Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. Yesterday, the writer and illustrator Jerry Craft received this year's John Newbery Medal for his graphic novel, New Kid. It's the first graphic novel to receive the prize for the most outstanding contribution to children's literature. New Kid is about a 12-year-old boy named Jordan, and he wants to go to art school. But his parents put him in an exclusive private school. He's one of the few students of color. Several years ago, John Lewis, the Georgia congressman, civil rights giant, received a National Book Award for his graphic nonfiction coming-of-age memoir done with writer Andrew Aden and artist Nate Powell. The three-part graphic memoir is called March. And recently, on the recommendation of a colleague, I read Roller Girl. It's an award-winning graphic novel. It tells a compelling story about friendship, doubt, navigating the middle school years through roller derby. Comic books, graphic novels, graphic nonfiction go to the library and the bookstore, and they're taking up more and more shelf space. So to learn more about the art and commerce of comics and graphic books, I'm pleased to be joined by two guests. Rob Kirby is a longtime cartoonist. His comic strip Curbside ran in dozens of LGBTQ and alternative papers in the U.S. and Canada from 1991 to 2008, and I remember reading it in The Village Voice when I lived in New York. He has also created a number of books and edited numerous anthologies. I'm so glad you could join us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Barbara Schultz runs the comic art degree program, which she helped establish, at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. She's been working professionally in comics since 1991, including work with DC, Dark Horse, Image, and Devil's Due Comics. I love that name, Devil's Due Comics. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
And we want to hear from you. Do you read graphic novels? Why are you drawn to them? If you're a comic book artist or an aspiring comic book artist, we'd love to hear from you about what you're trying to say with your art. Give us a call, 651-227-6000, toll free, 800-242-2828. Now, to start off, and I ask you, Barbara, this, I use the term comic book, graphic novel, graphic nonfiction. I kind of use them interchangeably. And is that okay?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So people do that?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, Rob, you had a comic strip for two decades, Curbside, as I mentioned. And so how did you get into the comic strip business?
Well, I started reading comic. I mean, I think I was always – I was born a cartoonist. It just took me a really long time to get to the point where I was actually doing it. So, first of all, the advice I give to any young cartoonist is wants to – asks me about breaking into the business or whatever, I just tell them, well, you have to draw, you know, just start doing it. It was basically reading underground publications like queer zines and stuff that really sparked me. It really got me on that path. I felt like I'd kind of found my voice. I found my voice actually doing this, and that was my in, was underground stuff.
Underground. And you did for two decades, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The alternative papers and the small presses began to dry up, though. And eventually I lost my enough income and stuff. So I really wanted to – I stopped doing that. And I wanted to actually get more ambitious and do longer form work too. And I've also published a lot of anthologies because I like working with other people.
And Barbara, you got into the business in 1991. Do I have that right, or around that time?
Yes, 1991 was sort of post-college.
So I was looking at you, inked for DC on Books of Magic, Image Comics, Micronauts, and G.I. Joe. So what drew you into the business?
Oh, I grew up with a family that loved comics.
Was it Mad Magazine?
Yes. My father actually had the reprints of the Mad Magazines from the 1950s with the Charles Adams family strips. And then I have three older brothers who all read comic books. So there was just comics of every sort around the house. So I've always just really adored the art form. And I did go to college for painting. And as I was graduating, I met another comic artist in town who was actually hiring studio assistants. And I just sort of learned the business by getting hired there and starting to work and learning the ropes. It was really fabulous.
Now, were you one of the few women in the business at that time?
Yes, I was. I think while I was trying to find work, there was really just a handful of women. Jill Thompson, Linda Medley, who were, looking and working. When I was in high school, though, there were a number of women who often get overlooked. That kind of inspired me that, I could go do that. This is viable. June Bridgman, Cynthia Martin, Jan Dusima were all like working at Marvel in DC and doing stuff. And I was like, yes, this could work. This could be a path for me.
Yes. And Rob, so just to give people an image, so you're doing curbside and it's mm-hmm. pre-internet age, it's pre-digital.
Right.
And you're working with the alternative press. So was this a tough business to keep getting published by different presses around, because they're all small. Village Voice was a big one, obviously, but most of them are pretty small around the country.
Well, I wasn't in the Village Voice. I was in the
New Yorker Press.
They were,
intense
rivals. You could not be in one or the – you had to be one or the other. Working for the alternative presses, it wears you down because, they're small payments. The more papers you're in, the better. But, I also had – quote unquote competition from two of the best cartoonists around, such as Alison Bechdel and Eric Warner. So I kind of had to, if a paper had one gay male comic strip, they often wouldn't want another one. So it was hard. But it was great training, terrific training. I learned so much. I really honed my craft doing that. And I learned to be concise.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call from Grace in St. Paul. Grace?
Hi.
How are you? What's your question?
I don't actually have a question.
Okay.
I just wanted to share my experience with graphic novels.
Please.
I'm so happy that you guys are discussing this topic. I went to the Perpich School in Golden Valley, so kind of familiar with the arts background and MCAT and such. What I would like to share about is how graphic novels are a great way for kids with low ability, so I have a learning disability, but it's a great way for them to get involved in literature, whereas like dense novels might not be as accessible to them. And that's not to say that they don't have academic value, of course. Like I think of Persepolis, great
right.
example of a graphic novel that's
and what is Persepolis about?
It's like semi-documentary. It's like a memoir novel about the 1979 Iranian Revolution.
Right.
But it's a very serious topic, but it's presented in a way that's accessible and, with visuals and written word that can make that kind of topic something that someone normally wouldn't get to understand, make it something interesting and fun for them to absorb.
Well, thank you for calling in. I'd like both of you to react. I hadn't really quite thought about it, but it is an alternative pathway into reading books.
Yeah. Yeah. Accessibility. I love what she said about being accessible. I think comics are a great teaching tool. You can really, there's a whole strain of books about, health issues, such as Marbles by Ellen Forney, which is about her bipolar disorder. And she just breaks certain things down in visual terms, like even a day of depression in one single page. And it makes it so immediate to the view, to the reader. And there's no dialogue. It's six panels of her on the couch. She cannot get up. She really puts across this crippling major depression that is like halting her entire life in one page. And I think that's one of the strengths of graphic novels now. I think schools are really beginning to use them as tools, mm-hmm. and organizations as well.
Barbara?
Yes, and after I was sort of done with my superhero run, I did, for a number of years, I did, with Lerner Publishing in town here, a series that was directed straight towards the schools and school libraries. There was a series of mythologies, like Hercules, the Trojan horse. They abbreviated the war down to the horse. But also then for the Coughlin Group, I think they're also local. Books on science, books on archaeology. And I did that for a number of years. And again, they were sort of like third grade readers. They dealt with science and all this history. Eleanor Roosevelt, basically, I said, if there's any Roosevelt book, I want to work on it, because I always loved history. And I remember when I was in school, I passed a few science tests because I read a science comic when I was very young. And so I always really loved that. And they are a gateway into the world. Some people don't know how to, some children don't always like engage well with books. And it's a good way just to get them engaging with books.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really struck, mentioned the John Lewis memoir, you know, mm-hmm. three-part graphic memoir, which is really powerful. And a couple of years ago, during the debate for the Affordable Care Act, an economist at MIT published a graphic nonfiction explaining America's healthcare system. Good luck with that one. But actually, it was actually very interesting. And another economist at George Mason University recently did a graphic nonfiction arguing why we should have more open borders to immigrants. So when I think about comic books and graphic novels, graphic nonfiction, naturally think about superheroes. And yet it's such a rich variety of stories for adults across the board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I don't think about superheroes at all. That's just not my I think about more books geared more towards adults. Not that superhero things are not geared towards adults. Things like Watchmen, you know, it's a classic. But a book I just finished. I'm doing an interview for Publishers Weekly with the author. It's coming up this spring, right in time for the 50th anniversary of Kent State. It's called Kent State, Four Dead in Ohio, and it's a really powerful book, really tremendous graphic novel, one of the best I've read in the last like 5 years. It will teach, if you think you know the story, it will give you a lot more background, a lot of details. It's going to be a really important book, I think.
Let's go to Shannon in St. Paul. Shannon?
Hi. I just was listening in and wanted to piggyback on the previous caller and say what a great thing graphic novels have been for my kids as they were early readers. Growing up, I always noticed that it seemed to be, that section seemed to be more the superheroes and more boy skewing, but now there's such great female writers as well that have entered in. And my daughter and sons have particularly enjoyed the books by Raina Telgemeier. Mm. And, the Guts, the Sisters, the Smile, things like that.
Gotcha. Barbara?
I believe she might be one of the best-selling comic artists of all time, actually, along with Dave Pilkman of Dogman fame, which I believe started – didn't he start with Captain Underpants?
Two of their characters started
writing Dogman, which is the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Well, my youngest had no interest in reading, nothing in reading, and it was Captain Underpants that changed everything. And that was the book that he all of a sudden liked to read, liked to look at books, and it was Captain Underpants.
Yeah, they're a great gateway, aren't they?
Yeah.
And Raina Telgemeier is huge.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
Well, an interesting thing, a little weird aside, is Dogman is also now a touring national musical that my nephew is playing Dogman in.
So tell us a little bit of the story of Dogman. What is for the listeners that aren't aware of it?
Well, it's my understanding is that the two characters created this fictional superhero called Dogman, and of course, he goes around and has adventures. I would say it's a huge 10-plus graphic novel series. The new one just came out in time for Christmas. I don't know how to really categorize it beyond that, but fun, adventures, really just to be experienced in and of itself, I believe.
Okay. Well, good. Well, let's go to Jill in Cresco, Iowa. Jill?
Hi.
So, what's your question or experience? Tell us about your experience.
Well, I've been an art teacher for 3 years in southern Iowa, and I taught comics and illustration, and If there's anyone out there that wishes to teach a comic class, I use the books. It's called Drawing Words and Writing Pictures by Jessica Abel and Matt Madden. And they also have a sequel book called Mastering Comics. And I pretty much just use a lot of their lessons in there as a Bible for having high school students write and make their own, by the end of the semester, make their own miniature six-page comic book. And I kept copies of everything that they made. And I didn't have any prereq class for them to take before it. So I had people that never drew anything, just stick figures, and pretty much taught right from the beginning, backgrounds, how to draw people, all the way to the end, making their own short story. And I was such a fantastic experience.
Okay, listening to you, I wish you had been my teacher. That sounds like a great experience. I assume that was a wonderful experience for the students.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. So, Barbara, you're the teacher.
Yeah. Oh, those are great books. Mm-hmm. I keep them in the reference shelf at MCAD because Jessica Abel and Matt Madden are in my age range, and the book is like all my lesson plans rewritten by them. I think we must have learned from all of the same sources. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend that book to anybody right. who wants to know more about how to make comics.
Mm-hmm. Rob?
Yeah, and, you know, good on you. I think that's awesome that you taught your kids to do that, to make their own comics. I think that's a wonderful thing. Did you get much pushback on that from any of them?
Oh, well, there's always students like that. And but I was very insistent, and there was nobody that quit. You know, everybody produced something, and you know, I kept everything. They're like little precious, tiny little books for me. So yeah. I'm not really big on, you know, it's hard. I make more alternative comics myself. So I like zine conventions
right.
For yeah. going into more things. And sometimes I would bring that box of little comics that they make and just show it off, not sell, but just show, look at what my students have made. And cool.
Well, I think your students are lucky. So, like I said, I wish I had been able to take your class. Thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
And let's see. Let's go to Helen. Helen is in Minnetonka. Helen?
You're talking to an old lady who's a comic book lover.
Well, and there's no generational divide here, I don't think.
I know. I'm 79. But I discovered Sandman when I was in my 50s.
Oh, by Neil Gaiman?
Neil Gaiman. And I think the first illustrator was Williams or something like that. And it was so beautiful, such an amazing take on mythology and mystery. And you know, Neil Gaiman is kind of cynical, ironic, and it was just an amazing, eye-opening experience. But I will say, don't ever force your kids to throw out comics, because I have boxes in the basement, and that, along with my porcelain-faced dolls, would have made me a rich woman.
So, Rob, how big an influence has Neil had in this area or on the industry?
Oh, I think it's probably immeasurable. You know, he actually, they use him, they ask him, and he does occasionally lend blurbs to novels, you know, and books of short stories. And, you know, Shirley Jackson's a big, I'm a big fan of Shirley Jackson, and they had him rave about the recent biography. So, I mean, of her that was published a couple of years ago. And so, yeah, he's a titan. He's a Schultz. He's a Bechdel. He's a, you know, Bernie Wrightson. Trying to throw in some of those mainstreamy artists in there, too.
Barbara?
Right. Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, he came over with Alan Moore from Watchmen. It was of the British. They called it the British Invasion. Grant Morrison. They started to bring almost a little bit more literature sort of quality to the comics that DC was putting out through their Vertigo line. Vertigo. Now defunct Vertigo. Yeah. But yeah, definitely, completely, I think, changed the landscape of comics. And that would have been the mid to late 80s, I believe. And they're still, you know, Watchmen is still going strong, still inspiring new comics, television shows. And, of course, now Gaiman is also, you know, always inspiring comics, television, movies. Mm-hmm. So just and brought the level, I think, of what the quality of a comic could be up considerably.
And what's interesting now is, I mean, Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman, I mean, these are, you know, giant names. But now there seems to be so many people that are participating, and this market just has really grown, and they help build this market, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the sort of, you look at them as building blocks?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. We have more callers on the line. I'm going to give out the number again. But first, I think it's probably, this is a good time to take a break and get some of today's news from Phil Picardi. Phil? If you're just joining us, I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. My guests are Rob Kirby, a longtime cartoonist best known for his comic strip Curbside, and Barbara Schultz, who runs the comic art degree program at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. So let me just give out the number again. If you have a question for Rob, Barbara, about becoming a comic book author, illustrator, give us a call, 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828. And if you like reading graphic fiction and nonfiction, what books would you recommend people read? Again, 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828. So let's go right back to the phones and Anne in St. Louis Park. Anne?
Hello.
Hi. What's your comment?
Well, I am thrilled that you're having this discussion. I'm an educator in the St. Louis Park Public Schools, and last night at Peter Hobart Elementary, we had our first Project Lit Family Book Club, and the book club was based on the book El Defo by C.C. Bell, which is a graphic novel, and we had a number of students and their parents or adults attend the book club. And for many of the parents and teachers, it was their first experience reading a graphic novel.
Huh.
And just to hear what they thought graphic novels were versus what they learned they were, and taking not only the graphics, but the context clues or frames and the dialogue and balancing all of those can make for a really engaging experience for readers. And the discussion that came from the book, El Defo, was incredible. And I'm just really glad to hear people talking about the use of graphic novels and that graphic novels are reading.
Oh, thanks so much for sharing that. And Barbara, I wonder, do you hear that a lot, what people think a graphic novel is versus what the actual experience of reading a graphic novel?
Yes. I mean, I think that's still, you know, really prevalent. I think a lot of people who are parents today were still on that cusp of comics becoming a more popular art form. So there's still a little bit of maybe that misconception. There might be still like, oh, well, that's just collecting all the Superman issues, and I would never be interested in that. But, yeah, again, books like that we've mentioned, like Persepolis, have definitely changed that. Book like Alison Bechdel's Fun Home. There's just been a good generation of the growth of the graphic novel.
And what is Fun Home about?
Fun Home is about Alison Bechdel, who's a queer comic artist, learning to grow up with her own slightly dysfunctional, literate and queer family in, what would that have been, the 70s, the 60s?
The 70s, yeah, mostly. Mm-hmm. And coming out as a lesbian. Her father was closeted, she learned later in life, and he either died in an accident or killed himself soon after she went to college. And the book is about her reconciling old family secrets and exposing them and dealing with them. And it's, you know, it was hugely acclaimed and won, I think it was nominated for the National Book Award. I don't think it won, but, you know, it hugely racked up respectability for graphic novels.
It sounds very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are tentpole books, things like Watchmen or Fun Home or Mouse by Art Spiegelman, mm-hmm. or more recently, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by New Yorker cartoonist Roz Chass, which is about dealing with your ailing aged parents. And it's hilariously funny and very powerful, too. And it's, she, again, that was hugely acclaimed and just, again, racked up the respectability level for graphic novels in general. But they still have a long way to go. A lot of people have all these misconceptions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's see. Let's go to John in Rochester. John?
Hi. This is a fantastic discussion. A quick story before my question. When I was 40 some years ago, I'm dyslexic, and my family are voracious readers. My dad gave me a copy of Moby Dick, a comic book of Moby Dick, and encouraged me to read that. And I must have been 6, 7. And after I did, it got me to read the actual book of Moby Dick and started my whole lifetime of loving to read even through dyslexia. Hmm. And I still remember one very specific frame of the captain hanging on to the coffin at the end with the rain pouring. And when I read the actual book, it was like the comic book came to life in my head.
That's wonderful. And you said you had a question.
Yes, the question. Actually, now I have two, but the first one is,
let's keep the one, okay.
Keep one. The resources that I'm looking for my kids are historical graphic novels and literature graphic novels like that. I know the library might have some, and I'm wondering if there are websites or other places that I can look to get them involved as well, because they both love reading and will read anything we put in front of them.
So. Well, I love this question. Absolutely. So, Barbara?
There are a lot, quite a few websites out there. I wish I could give you a specific one, but a very easy search would be just what you typed in, like historical graphic novels. I think I know the series you're talking about for Moby Dick. I think I might have read that one myself. but I was just there the other day, and there'll be lists of suggested readings. In any of those, you could type in, you know, science graphic novels about science, about historical figures, great works of literature, and that should pop up pretty easily.
Okay.
It's a really popular field too, and I think it's Macmillan has just announced a new science line of graphic novels that's supposed to be coming out in 2020.
Rob?
Well, I'll plug a site that I do freelance writing for, the Comics Journal. And that is tcj.com. You can read reviews and features about all different aspects of comics. It's a vast world, you know, adult comics, kids books, YA, superheroes, alternative everything. So it's a good starting point.
Mm-hmm. So that's tcj.com.
TCJ, the Comics Journal.com. Yeah, so okay. Super easy. Right.
TCJ.com.
Yeah.
All right. Betsy in St. Paul. Betsy?
Oh, hey there. Hold on. I'm going to take you off speakerphone.
Thank you.
So I am the executive director of one of the district councils in the city of St. Paul. There are 17 of us, and we're essentially the neighborhood organizations for the city. And one of our district councils, known as the Frogtown Neighborhood, actually took their community plan and had an artist make it into a graphic novel. And one of the things that we struggle with as neighborhood organizations is access and helping people to want to be engaged and finding out how things are relevant to them. And it's a huge challenge. And this graphic novel was pretty land-breaking. And so I wish that my organization could afford to do it, but we're not there yet. So I was wondering if the authors can comment on the ability of graphic novels to even just make information more accessible to community and how it can, how they can be used as kind of almost like an interpretive tool for community members?
That's a great question, and both of them are nodding. So, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. Comics are a wonderful art form for breaking down complex things into easily accessible visual information. One of my favorite examples of that is a book called The Age of Selfishness, which is about the financial meltdown of 2008-9, I believe it was, that terrible time. And this book by Daryl Cunningham, he is able to visualize such exciting topics as CD derivatives into really easily accessible visual information so the reader understands why those were bad and what they did to how they helped to melt down our economy. Comics are a fantastic tool for that. And I think that's one of the reasons, one of the major reasons they're really hitting it big lately in schools, like is that they really are good teaching tools. They really are good door to opening to, you know, learning. That way.
And Barbara, you've done a lot with schools.
And organizations too. Yeah. I know early on when I was at MCAD, a number of the renter associations came to the school and they had a small budget, and I hired one of the students to put together a book on renters' rights versus landlords' rights and responsibilities. And it was aimed at communities and some of the like lower class income communities, so people would know what their rights were, what options they did have if they were sort of facing. I wish it was still in print. I don't think it still is. But that was like one project I was involved with that I thought, you know, was sort of needed. I also worked with, I believe it was the Historical Society, and they were doing oral histories, and they had gotten a small grant to go around and collect oral histories around the state. And they brought a couple of my comic students to learn how to do the oral histories, teach them to do the oral histories of themselves, their community, and even how to create a comic around them.
Off of them. What they heard.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was just sort of, again, about sort of like fostering community and, you know, passing down history from one generation to the next.
I like that.
And that was
really cool.
Nice project.
And,
it's
like media training for them, too. That's really cool.
So let's go to David in St. Cloud. David?
Well, good morning, Barbara and Ron. Thank you for having me on.
And what's your observation or question?
Well, I wanted to share, when you guys were talking about education and children being exposed to graphic novels, my experience with that, my children, I have boys age 9 and 7, and my first grader, my 7-year-old, I was concerned about him reading graphic novels and how it might impact his ability to read overall. He reads at a fourth grade level now. I think it's greatly helped him attach emotive context to words, to written words. And so now when he reads outside of graphic novels such as Dog Man and Captain Underpants, like he loves to, I think he gets a richer understanding of just text when he reads as well. And then the other thing that I wanted to discuss quickly, too, is that what other types of infringement do you see on graphic novels popping up into pop culture, such as Margaret Atwood's Angel Catbird and Claudio Sanchez's The Armory Wars for progressive rock?
Barbara?
Was the question who else is sort of crossing the boundaries into comics?
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard to keep up now.
Yeah. Seems like there's so much going on.
There's so much in both directions.
One of the questions I want to ask you is when you think about, you know, comic books, graphic novel, graphic fiction, but then also what's happening with video games, with the movies, I mean, streaming. I mean, it seems like there's an ecology that has grown that feeds off of each other. And then there are these subtexts that go on, right? That we've been talking about, some more informational or more nonfiction. You know, it's a fascinating mixture.
I think, it's been going on for a while. And all writers of television movies don't always make great comic book writers.
Right.
Josh Whedon, who, of course, was well known for some of his superhero films, and of course for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
In Cloverfield,
has done some really great comics. He had a fantastic run on the X-Men years ago that sort of brought that back to life in that one. But he also brought his slew of writers from his studio, and I don't know all of their names, but they've gone on to also create. And I think, you know, they're very visual writers. And, of course, I've always been a huge fan of Margaret Atwood.
So yes,
that was
course.
Always exciting to me. Yes.
The only person I can think of is Representative or Congressman John Lewis with his trilogy March about his civil rights activism in the 60s, which is a wonderful series. And I've actually only read the first volume, and I really need to read the other two. But that would be another
example. That was a really powerful book.
It was great. Yeah. And I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And it's wonderfully cartooned as well. So.
You know, it's so funny that one of the earlier callers had mentioned Moby Dick, and I did read that comic book version of it, and I do remember that last scene that he's talking about, or that image that he's talking about. And I think he was right. When I read Moby Dick, that image probably is what I had in my mind when I was reading it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Lauren in Minneapolis. Lauren?
Hi, it's Laureen.
Laureen, sorry.
I wanted to plug Good Talk by Mira Jacobs, which is an awesome graphic memoir that our equity committee at school read, and just really, it was a great read.
And what's the story about?
It's a story about an Indian American woman and in interracial marriage, and questions that her son has as a child of color in an interracial family, and sort of tackles her own identity formation, but then sort of what's happening with her son and the questions that he's having. Mm. And there's a plot line also about the 2016 election and how one set of grandparents is kind of processing that and the impact it has on this interracial family. Mm. The question I had, though, was about my 9-year-old son, who I heard the previous caller talk about Dog Man and Captain Underpants. My son is a he loves those graphic novels. And what we're trying to encourage him to start reading books that have more densely pages that are more dense in terms of their word content. And finding that he's really resisting that, and I'm wondering how we can start making that transition, and whether it feels like there's a downside to having him stay on this graphic novel path and not build his skills towards more stamina with reading pages that have a lot of words on them.
Well, I know every story is different, but I can say that that was my youngest, not my oldest, but that was my youngest. And they, you know, they transition sometimes at their own pace. But Rob, Barbara, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would just say let him, you know, encourage him, but let him find his own path with reading. I mean, I just think anytime you're reading is a good thing.
Cannot emphasize that enough.
Right.
I cannot emphasize that enough. Please encourage him to keep reading. And, like, you can gently nudge him, but, you know, it's good that he's reading.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps comics on areas he's interested in. Like, I was very interested in astronomy when I was little.
Okay.
So some of the, you know, some of the comics I read.
So more of the science.
Some of the sciences, and also history. If there's figures, there's a lot of really great biography comics out there. Yeah. But, you know, just piquing the interest in, they always say, like, you don't really learn or investigate until you have a question or something you're interested in. And a comic might only, or a graphic novel might only give them so much information, and they might start exploring more.
Oh, I like that.
Outside of that one book.
When I was a kid, honestly, if you had given me a graphic novel about the 50 states and the state capitals, I'd have been all over it. I was obsessed with that for a while. So
yes. So you were one of those people that could memorize all the state capitals.
Oh, no, I did memorize them, but yes. I had a book in the 50 states, but it had been in comics, it would have been even better. So yeah, and to expand upon what Barbara said, like, there's so many different There's so many subjects out there that are available in graphic novel form that explore whatever those subjects are. So yeah, there's just a world of stuff, and it's just getting bigger.
It is. Let's go to Larry in St. Paul. Larry.
Oh, hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. You know, I love this subject because, as another gentleman spoke to a few minutes ago, when I was a child, I picked up a book that we had in our house called Topics, T-O-P-I-X. I was raised in a German Catholic family, and this book was lying around. It was about 9 by 12 and about 3 inches thick, and it was all Lives of the Saints in a graphic comic book form. And I was fascinated with these stories, and the stories were about, you know, the lives of these saints and something that they had done to show the goodness of who they are. I still have visuals of a couple of them on the morals of on gossip and bad behavior that come to me when I think about gossip, and it broke up a whole new world of interest in reading. That took me all the way through high school. And in my senior year, I read a classic story instead of the book that we were supposed to read for literature. And I read the classic instead and wrote my book report, and I got nailed by the teacher because it was clear that I hadn't read the book. I read a classic.
Oh, well. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. You know, one of the things that's interesting is that obviously these are people who are calling in interested in the topic, but it seems like, you know, these comic books, graphic novels, there are these touchstones in people's lives that they really remember this book. Yeah. And I find that really – I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was there were several. There was The Peanuts Treasury by Charles Schulz. I loved that so much. He was a huge inspiration for me. And also my parents were huge New Yorker and cartoon fans. And we had a book called Homebodies by Charles Adams. And it was basically all his macabre Adams family, you know, single panel things. And I loved it. I read it 1,000 times. And those are two that I really remember really well. Yeah.
Barbara?
Oh, I think I already mentioned Charles Adams. Charles Adams, absolutely. And I remember my younger brother and I breaking into my older brother's closet to get to his, like, Superman books and Bizarro Worlds and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but I think the visuals, it's such a image. I mean, the imagery between the words and the pictures, the images that stick with us.
Yeah.
Through it. It's such a powerful language, comics is. I think it makes a huge impact.
Yeah. See, mine was sneaking to my brother's room, and in the closet was Mad Magazine, because he got Mad Magazine. Right. I was too young to get Mad Magazine, but I managed to read it. Then he would get mad at me. let's go to June in Rochester. June?
Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to speak about the proliferation of comics on Instagram. And particularly, you can search for a particular topic the way you'd look anything else up. And a friend of mine was going through actually a very bad emotional time, and she put in words that were talking about her emotions. And she actually came up with this great Instagram account called Hidden Heartbreak. And it turns out that the author of the Instagram account made it into a book. And she bought the book, and it really helped her through this time. And the way she spoke of it is that she didn't feel alone. And the comics were kind of funny, but also very serious. And I think the name of it is Hidden Heartbreak by Emma Lee.
Okay.
L-E-E. And it's just interesting that you can put in almost any topic on Instagram and, you know, find like a doodle or a comic, and this was actually made into a story. And when I read the reviews, I saw that it was helpful to other people as well.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And so, Barbara, Instagram and, you know, some of the new technologies? Is a different way of distributing stories?
Distributing, building an audience, self-publishing, and Instagram comics is a thing. I think of the best ones as little strips because you can upload 4 images at a time that people can kind of
you can scroll.
Scroll through. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a new web strip sort of thing.
So, Rob, do you look at these?
I have an Instagram account and I put previews of my graphic novel in progress. When I finish a page, finally finish a page, I can't wait to put it on Instagram, get some encouragement and feedback from my peers and my peeps. And speaking to what she was talking about with emotions, and there are a lot of alternative cartoonists that write about their depression or their high anxiety or whatever, and a lot of them get really deep into their stuff, and many of them are very appreciated. I think they really are a reaching out tool, for other people, and also just to help them, the creator, processing their emotions, and it touches other people.
Okay. Let's go to Carl in Minneapolis. Carl?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on. It's a great topic. I really appreciate it. And my son is 8 years old, and he was gifted a graphic novel last year and has just totally gotten him into reading. And it's been so much fun to see him to the level he's at now, which is not only does he love reading now, but he also asked for Christmas. He asked for an actual reading light for his bed. And he
thumbs up on that one.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. He'd never been like that before. I mean, he enjoyed reading, but not to this degree. And so now we are, ending up telling him, you need to turn your light off and get some sleep. And then what this has done for me, I'm a 53-year-old stay-at-home dad, and I have also gotten into graphic novels because of it, because he's been reading this series called Bad Guys, and it's been spectacular. I mean, I've actually enjoyed looking through it, so now I've gotten into it, and I've actually gone to teen graphic novels and have read, like, Atomic Robo, Artemis Fowl. Some of the books from Artemis Fowl turn into graphic novels, and then Bone is another one that I'm reading through right now.
Wow.
And I'm just truly enjoying it. And he and I are actually, comparing notes. He kind of looks through my books, I look through his books, and it's been fantastic for our family to, see that happen for him and for me. My wife actually loves seeing me read. So,
well, I love this, and thanks so much for calling with that. I mean, I love that. He learned from his son.
And see, people, comics can bring families together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know. I have several friends, and it's cross-generational reading. Trips to the library.
So in the very short time left, we have about 2 minutes left. So just want to ask both of you, an aspiring artist wants to get into this business. Very quickly, what would you recommend?
Make some work and post, if you can post it online, post it on Instagram, create a webcomic, check out Webtoons. You can publish comics on this site called Webtoons. But it's sort of the same as when we were starting out. You have to make it, but then you have to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. And read everything you can, that read all everything and just let it all go into the hopper and just – it'll all process. You'll work through your influences and just find your voice. And you learn by doing more than anything. You can go to school for this too, but learn by doing as well on your own.
And you'd mentioned that you like putting your latest work up on Instagram.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to do one?
It varies, but a graphic novel, really quickly. It's a long marathon. It's not like a sprint. It's going to take me. I don't expect to finish this book until probably the end of next year.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Rob Kirby is a longtime cartoonist. His comic strip Curbside ran in dozens of LGBTQ and alternative papers in the U.S. and Canada. Barbara Schultz runs the comic art degree program at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design. And thanks for all the callers. This was really a good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.